Welcome to Small Worlds Podcast. My name is Corey O'Flanagan.
And I'm Leanne Davidson.
Today on the podcast, we are speaking with an amazing guy that we met when we were doing the Everest Base Camp trek in Namche Bazaar. His name is Tommy Gustafson. And Tommy is doing a project with some other folks in and around Nepal. It's great. They're trying to do amazing things with cleaning up the environment in the Nepal and the Everest Valley region. It's called Sagarmatha Next. Sagarmatha is the Nepalese word for Mount Everest.
So they have this fresh and innovative concept where science meets art to preserve and nurture the mountain environment. So stay tuned to hear that. But before, this episode is brought to you by Drift Car Sharing.
Are you someone who's always looking for the coolest, most local experience wherever you travel? If so, you have to check out Drift Car Sharing.
Instead of borrowing from a traditional rental car company, Drift lets you drive local cars while they're away, meaning you're not only visiting the trendiest sites, but you're doing so in an actual local's car. Every trip on Drift is protected by a specially designed insurance product from Allstate Insurance, so you can travel with peace of mind.
Guys, I've had my car with Drift for a few months now. It's amazing. It's making me money while we travel. You're going to love it. So check them out and learn more at drivedrift.com. That's DRIVEDRIFT.com. Start, introduce yourself and give us a little background on how you got to Namche.
Okay, well, my name is Tommy Gustafsson, and the last name indicates I was born in Sweden, in Scandinavia, quite a long time ago. And I traveled to Nepal first time back in 1983.
Okay. The year after I was born.
Oh, wow. I kind of escaped India after getting overwhelmed by all the people and, you know, the heat and everything. So I kind of escaped, took the bus across the border and took the bus up to Kathmandu, which was also kind of a bustling, kind of a chaotic place, but it was very different from India. So that was back in 1983. And I started doing a trek first. I went to Langtang, north of Kathmandu.
Okay.
Did the circuit. And then next year, 84, I came back, went to Annapurna, did the Annapurna circuit.
Were you living in on the subcontinent for a while? Were you
No, I was kind Sweden? Of just back and forth.
Yeah. Did you do the hippie trail?
No, I don't think I ever did, you know, the real hippie trail. I mean,
maybe bits and bobs.
Going from the border of India by bus up to Kathmandu, that was probably the way most hippies came here.
Yeah,
I can imagine.
But I wasn't kind of into it. I didn't really think about that. I was just anxious to get out of India.
Yeah, get out of the stimuli.
Yeah, no. So then basically 1985 was my third time I came back, and I was climbing as a hobby, you know, a hobby climber. So of course Everest was there, you know, there was some idea of going to see Everest, not to climb it at that point, but you know, to go see it.
Yeah.
So I came up to this valley first time in 1985 in the spring. And this was different from all the other places. People were different. The Sherpa people, it just struck me how incredibly friendly. They had these very nice smiles on their faces.
Yeah.
You felt very welcome.
Yeah.
And I think that's when I kind of fell in love with this place.
Yeah. Has that continued?
Yeah, and then for quite many years, I tried to come back more or less every year. But then, of course, it started competing a little bit with back home, starting family, career, you know,
all the grown-up things.
All the grown-up things. Yeah. So I mean, for the next almost 20 or 18 years, I came back almost every year.
Okay.
Sometimes twice, but mostly once.
Wow.
So I became very frequent, and I felt at home. You know, Nepal was like my second home in my heart.
Yeah.
However, it didn't go that well with my family. They didn't kind of consider it a second home. So I had, for many years when I was working back home, and you know, I was thinking of, you know, could I ever have half my time in Nepal and half my time in, you know,
best of both worlds.
Yeah, in the Western world. But it kind of never worked out. My wife at the time was, she was never interested.
And,
you know, I mean, she had other interests. So, I mean, that's how it is
sometimes.
It is.
Yeah. So I was kind of busy. And then back in 2009, one of my oldest friends here, a Sherpa guy from the lower Khumbu, that I helped start a company. We started a trekking company called Peak Promotion, and he actually made it to one of the most successful companies here in the country because he was a very, very, very smart guy and hardworking. But he came to me, and he came visit in Sweden many times, but he came in 2009, and he told me, we have a huge problem. Everest is now being portrayed as, you know, the highest trash dump site in the world.
These documentaries come out, these feature films come out.
It was like CNN and BBC was here for that season up in base camp, and the main report was the trash, you know. And he said, and he was a smart guy. He never went to school, but he was a really street smart guy, and he said, we have to do something about this. We can't just let that become the, you know, the image of Everest.
Protect it and keep it.
Yeah, so he had this idea of do a cleanup on Everest. I mean, a real big effort.
Okay.
And he asked me for help. So I said, okay, of course I want to help you because I love this place and I love you, man, so I'm going to help you. But I can't raise money to clean up on a mountain which is being trashed by Westerners who pay money to go there.
Yeah.
You know, that's not compelling
for
anyone.
No.
I mean, if I suggest it, somebody will say, why don't you ask those guys to pay for it or do it, you know? But I told him that I believe that we can use a clean up on Everest as a metaphor to gather support from the local community.
Okay.
Because the locals understand the importance of Everest, because that's why the tourists come here.
Yeah.
So I said, we can do the cleanup, but that cannot be the main issue. The main issue is the whole Khumbu Valley. That's where you have the high number of visitors and the big, let's say, challenges of waste, which has never been really conveyed in media.
No.
Yeah. The media only focuses on Everest.
Because it's the famous one, right?
It's the mountain that everybody knows.
Exactly.
Who knows? I mean, if you talk about Namche Bazaar back home,
no one's heard of it. Yeah,
nobody has heard of it. So he kind of got the idea and understood, and he said, "Yeah, sure." I mean, he wanted to do the cleanup, so whatever way we could raise the money, he was happy. But he also understood the bigger picture. So I started trying to get support, and was lucky to find it's a commercial company. They were a lottery. Kind of a lottery thing. It was invented in Holland, and it started out as a TV program where people went and answered questions. I think it's called Who Would Like to Be a Millionaire or something.
Something along those lines.
No way.
Yeah, okay.
That's so funny.
Yeah, so these guys established themselves in Sweden, and they called themselves Postcode Lottery. And they also wanted to, in Sweden, gambling is kind of, it's a little bit double, It's everybody likes it, but it's also considered a little bit, not kosher.
Kind of frowned upon.
Yeah. So they used, that some part of their profits would be invested into, kind of social development or good causes.
Makes it feel a little better.
Yeah.
It made, the whole idea of this lottery with only money as the target a little bit more kind of justified.
Yeah.
So basically they had a foundation connected to it. And so I applied to them. And finally they came through and they actually gave us $350,000.
Wow.
That's your start.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
For that project of cleaning Everest.
Absolutely.
And start supporting the local organization here in Khumbu, who is, since 25 years, have tried to keep, control of waste and keep the place clean.
Mm.
But they always have small resources, they don't get much support.
Absolutely.
There's only so much they can do, right?
They have struggled.
Yeah.
And both knowledge-wise from the start, what to do and how to do it, and then secondly, how do you have manpower? How do you pay people to actually do it?
Yeah. Is the thing that I would think of is as we pay these entrance fees to enter the national park in the valley, obviously in the United States, Canada, places like that, percentage of that goes towards cleanup and maintenance and stuff. Does that not exist here?
Well, as it is now, which has changed just the last 2 years, you first pay like 2,000 rupees, I think, when you come to Lukla.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that is for the local government. Nepal has kind of changed from a centralistic only government to a federal system where they have the central government, provincial governments, and then local regional governments.
Yeah.
And in this case, the regional government here in this valley basically have taken over all the responsibilities for environmental issues, waste management, medical health care, schools, etc. So they actually took over to start charging this 2,000 rupee fee. Before, you had to pay 1,000 rupees in Kathmandu to the central government.
Who knows where that goes?
That money, it was supposed to come here.
Yeah.
But everybody, I mean, I don't know because I'm not an accountant. I haven't checked the books. But I mean, everybody here said that money never, ever came over.
Yeah.
So now maybe it's better that the local government, who's actually based down in Sharikarka, below Lukla, they're much closer to everyone. And when they collect the fee, hopefully they will actually use it here locally. But I mean, that money is supposedly going to all these different things, so it's not just, you know, for environment.
So looking after the locals in terms of education,
it's about taking care of the, I mean, if you take the whole local government area that they are in charge of, it's 11,000 people living there, because it's also below Lukla. So they have a pretty big responsibility when it comes to, you know, all the social cares and stuff. So I don't know really
how that
money is divided on these areas. Mm-hmm. I know that they are interested and concerned about the environment, because they understand that tourism is a big part of their funding.
You know.
But I don't know how much.
And the popularity of these treks just continues to grow and grow.
Yeah.
So they've got to hopefully be able to see out into the future and be like, we've got to figure out solutions now for what the problems are going to be.
Yeah, and that's, in a way, now this is not nice against my Nepali brothers and sisters, but it is not typically Nepali to think three steps ahead.
Like, I find that with most tourism in countries, like second and third world countries, it's all about the buck now, as opposed to what's going to happen in 20 years when no tourists come.
Yeah, because, you know, if you think about it, this country, like many other underdeveloped countries, they are where we were maybe 75, 100 years ago.
Exactly. So,
in certain ways.
Yeah.
They have already catched on to most of our habits when it comes to the cities. But if you go out in the rural places, they are back there. And so their mindset is much more focused on right now.
Yeah.
How do I actually provide for me, my family, and things right now?
Yeah.
And they can't think too far ahead.
Yeah.
But I think that some people in the local government, of course, understands.
Yeah.
So they're thinking more forward. But so that is one fee. Then you pay another fee at the national park entrance.
Yeah.
And the national park is actually underneath the Ministry of Forestry, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they're actually a federal, central government entity. And their job is basically to protect and preserve the park in the sense of poaching. Because, you know, you have so many people living here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the wildlife, you know, if you go back in time, they probably poached a lot of the animals here. So they want to protect that. And that's one of their important parts, tree planting and keeping sure that, you know, there's no deforestation. So this conservation, that's their main focus.
Yeah.
You could argue and say, maybe they should be partly responsible for trash also.
Yeah, well, you would have thought
because it has a direct impact on nature and wildlife and everything. But it seems to be divided, and now the responsibility is on the local government.
Okay.
So whatever the money that goes to the national park, where it goes, I mean, they have like 75 park rangers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they do probably have costs, but I have no clue.
Again, you don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, how that is divided.
Yeah.
But we are trying not just to support directly this local organization, SPCC, which is in charge of waste management. That's one part of what we want to do. But secondly, we want to also try to help and make the local government, the national park, the buffer zone, which is a development committee, which also has a kind of, let's say, a role to play here, together with SPCs and others, to start work together.
Yeah.
Because this is a second part which is not what do you call it? It's not a great Nepali thing to work together.
Yeah.
So up in this valley, I mean, every village is basically
on their
it's
own.
Us. And they are them. They know each other well. They are intermarried and between.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
But in government bodies.
You know, so even Kumyung, which is the biggest permanent village just around the corner here.
Yeah.
And Namche. It's kind of an ongoing kind of
really?
Big brother, small brother fight.
Yeah.
And kind of struggle. So to get them to start understand, hey, if you all can start at least in this matter, to see it as a communal thing for everyone.
It will benefit everyone.
And work together. It's you're all going to benefit.
Yeah.
That's a big step to get to.
Yeah,
but that's one part what we're trying to do. So if we can actually help and make that happen.
Yeah.
Our vision is, of course, I mean, who should actually fund the operations of this waste management system for SPCC? Well, I think it should be mainly funded by the local government.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, if they feel that $2,000 they're charging now is needed for so many other things, well, why don't you raise it to $2,500?
Yeah.
I am sure that nobody will actually be outrageously mad paying 500 rupees more if you start communicating this is what this money is used for.
Yeah,
they could even say, you know, 2,000 rupees is for medical healthcare, school system, building roads, in poverty, you know, work, and this 500 is basically destined for environmental issues and waste management.
And that's the thing, people do care about that now.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what your company does exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm. So what are we doing to try to support this?
Yeah.
Well, so basically we started 2011, we did a cleanup on Everest, as we mentioned, and that kind of started helping this local organization building an infrastructure. So we built the first 32 of these waste bins that you find along the trains.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they have then themselves got sponsorship from local Nepali companies to build up to 106 of those bins. So now the trails are more or less kind of covered with waste bins, which means and has resulted in that the trails are pretty clean because now everybody has somewhere to put the trash.
It has been.
Yeah. And so the first part, collection part, works.
Yeah.
And it works very well. The problem is the second part. What do you do with the collected waste? And they don't have the resources, nor the, let's say, they haven't had the knowledge what to do with it or how to, you know, process it. So that is what we're focusing on with this project that we started just after the earthquakes, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Because we realized that the first part works, but we need, if we want to have this sustainable, we need to get the second step. And how do you actually handle the waste after collection? So Sagarmatha Next, which is the name of the center we're building and the project that we started, aims at supporting this organization to empower them, to raise their capacity to be able to handle a system where they both collect, separate, treat the waste properly so that it has a value for recycling, and process it so that it can be transported out, because most of it has to be transported back to Kathmandu for recycling. So what do we do here to help that happen? Well, Sagarmatha Next is kind of an innovation hub, a visitor center, upcycling facility, all in one. So basically we're going to focus on showing how you can actually turn waste into value.
Yeah.
So we're going to invite artists, designers from the whole world to come to our center. We have a house where they can stay. We have a workshop where they can create artwork, design products. And we will exhibit those products and that art in a gallery, in a shop, and hopefully sell it to many of the visitors that comes here.
Yeah.
And the money we can generate will then be directly invested in supporting this local organization to beef up their operations.
Great.
So that they then can take care of this process all the way to the transportation, bring it back to Kathmandu.
Bring it back to the city.
Where we have a recycling company nowadays, which most people don't believe when it comes to Kathmandu. Because if you go around in Kathmandu, the first thing you will think about is, why do they have all this garbage everywhere? Yeah. Unfortunately.
It's really true.
Yeah. But there are some really positive signs, small ones. There are 3 or 4 startups since the last 3-4 years, mm-hmm. and they are actually focusing on recycling yep. and waste management. And slowly.
And a big part of it has to be educating the local community. Because we as travelers and tourists, we're just more aware of these things just based on a lot of times where we've grown up and stuff like that. So I think that's, from what I've seen in traveling in second and third world countries, that's a big thing, is educating the people as to, like, here's what you can do and here's why you should do it.
Yeah.
And then when does your guys' set opening date is?
March next year.
Next year.
Yeah.
And then it's just going to be, it's lovely. It's on the walk up to the, everyone walks by it on their walk up to, on their day to get used to the new elevation.
Yeah.
And I think it's such great work.
Yeah.
Well, education, you know, I have a little bit of a split idea about education.
Yeah.
Because education is good. Knowledge is always, of course, good in many ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then education sometimes becomes very, very tunnel vision and kind of doesn't take in account, you know, what are the consequences of my knowledge that I'm now using.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So basically, we try to not use education so much when it comes to our center. We talk more about, how are we going to be inspirational? How can we inspire people to see why this is better than this?
And why it's beneficial to them as well.
Why they and everyone can benefit from doing something differently.
Yeah.
So that's, this art production is basically a showcase.
Yeah.
Don't burn waste materials
in
the pit, which is what the current use is now. See it as a resource that can actually be turned into a value, both a beauty value and a money value. And if you see it that way, it is almost like burning money if you go burn it.
It really is.
So if you can inspire somebody to see that, I think it's hopefully more lasting and it gives a much bigger impact than if I'm going to go and try to, you know, say, it's very bad to burn pet bottles because you pollute the air and the ground and it takes 50 years for it to degrade.
Good, bad idea.
That thing don't stick with people.
No, it's a blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Okay. No, it's so true, though.
Yeah.
Unless you're giving it your whole life. And I grew up with a guy who worked with as an environmentalist, so it's just been something that's on me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I totally understand, and I love the mixture of the art with it. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, and we are hopeful also when we then start getting artists to come here, and we hope to get artists from the whole world. I mean, both Nepali, but also from the whole world, and all different kinds of artists, not just sculptors, painters, you know, installation artists, photography artists. Mm-hmm. No matter what, that they are also kind of compelled to not just come and create, but also maybe do a workshop in the school here in Namche with the kids or in Kumyung school or with, you know, the local people who do artifacts to inspire them. Because, you know, if you go to the school here with 100 kg of trash with an artist and he says, hey, kids, you see this trash? Would you like to help me make something beautiful out of it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're going to do it
Kids
together.
Kids would love it,
Now you're not talking about waste management or environmentalism or something. You're creating something.
Yeah.
So hopefully you're addressing somewhere deeper in their head.
Yeah, exactly. You see this pile of no longer waste. You see this pile of something that I can use to make something amazing out of.
Yeah.
What a cool idea.
So kids, don't throw this stuff around because we can use it. We
can
make something out of it. And now you have been part of it. So you actually not just been told it can be done. Mm-hmm. You actually have done it. So that's part of what we would like to see in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And bring school classes maybe even from Kathmandu and other parts of Nepal.
Yeah.
Have them come here. Both to explore their own country, which they usually don't have much chances to do.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, take them to the center. Create things, show them, and then you're sending back ambassadors.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
To sort of wrap it up,
where
can people find information? Do you guys have anything out there, website?
We have a website, and the center's name is Sagarmatha Next. And Sagarmatha is Mount Everest.
Just so that we can note for the audience.
Okay, we'll take the spelling.
We will have this in our show notes. I'm going to get share your email and we'll share all this so that I can, we'll link everybody to
perfect.
This.
Perfect. Sagarmatha is the Nepali name of Mount Everest. Yeah. Everest has actually three names. So it's Sagarmatha in Nepal, it's Mount Everest in the rest of the world, and it's Chomolungma in Tibet.
Tibet.
And that is the original name, the oldest name. So sagarmathanext.com is a website. We have Instagram. We try to use social media for spreading.
Absolutely.
We haven't worked very much yet because we feel like we wanted to have our place
ready. Something to share on Instagram.
We understand
so that people can actually come visit. And when they visit online, they should actually be able to participate in an artist actually at work or an art exhibition.
Yeah.
Or see when people are doing virtual reality climbing of Everest, whatever they can do in our visitor center. So,
That's good stuff. Tom, we really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you. So thank you, Tommy. And guys, don't forget to check his website out. It's actually spelled www.sagarmathanext.com. We will have that in the show notes for you to check out because that is a very complicated way to remember it.
And as always, feel free to check out our website, www.smallworldspodcast.com. Follow our Instagram travels at Small Worlds Podcast. You can check us out on Facebook there as well.
And don't forget to subscribe and rate and review.
Tell a friend. Let us know how we're doing, guys. We're going to be trying some different format changes, and we are very curious what you think of them as we're going to be rolling those out over the next couple of weeks.
Thank you and good night.